heavy subject as it is, and all the heavy Gomorrah.
So we move forward, Mitzvah Hashem, in the sugya of Ibur Shana, and we're on Daf Yud Beis, and we're talking about Shvius a little bit today. So it's Yud Beis, Omer Aleph, and we're up to Tana Rabbanan, but that doesn't tell you much because a lot of Tana Rabbanan is on Yud Beis, Omer Aleph. The one that we're talking about is towards the bottom of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and you'll find it around, let's say, 15 lines up from the bottom. Does that make sense? Maybe it's a little less. Tana Rabbanan Ein Ha'Avrim Es Hashana. The first word in the line is Ein. Lo B'Shvius V'Lo Motzai Shvius. Now there are two separate halachas over here. They're both relevant to Shvius, but they should not be equated. First, we have the case of Shvius. Now, Shvius is a year in which there's an Easter Avodas HaKarka, and by adding another month of Chodesh Adar, we're extending the Easter Avodas Karka for another year, and that we don't want to do. And therefore, Shvius is not the appropriate time for Ibur Shan. So remind me, just in a few minutes, I want to come back to this point because it's an important statement in the Yerushalmi that's quoted here by the Rishonim, especially by the Yad Ramah, and offering a whole different reason as to why there's no Ibur Shan and Shvi. So we'll get back to that, Bili Neder, in a minute. But now let's talk about the eighth year, which is called Motzei Shvius. That's not a good time for Ibur Shana. Why? Because since the seventh year did not produce any grains, so we're really relying on the sixth year, and the grains of the sixth year have to sort of like be spread out over the sixth and seventh year. In the eighth year, we need the produce of the eighth year to feed the people. Now, by adding an extra month in the eighth year, you're delaying the bringing of the Omer by a month, and therefore you're delaying the Matir of Chadash by a month. So when the supplies are so limited, because again, it's the year after Shemitah, so in Shemitah year we had no produce whatsoever, we have only the produce of the sixth year, now we need the produce of the eighth year, and again, the eighth year is slowly producing. You know, we're now in the spring, and we can start, you know, taking some of the harvest out, but we still want to make sure that we can eat whatever we have. So whatever meager crops that we have in the eighth year, the year after Shvius, we want to be able to eat them. You know, if you impose an Easter Chadash by extending the year for another month, then there's very little access to that small amount of produce that they have to eat. You know, normally when you go from one year to the next, there's still produce from last year that is surplus produce that you can eat in this year. That doesn't happen in the case of the eighth year because you have no surplus from the seventh year. You had nothing in the seventh year. So you're really relying on the food that you have in that eighth year. And now you can impose an Isur Chadash for an extra month by adding the month of Adar and postponing the Omer for another month. But now the Braisa tells me which year in relation to Shemitah would be a perfect candidate for Ibur Shana. And that's what the Braisa addresses. Now, Emasai Regilim Li'aber, you can almost bet your bottom dollar that this particular year in the Shemitah cycle would be the year for Ibur Shana. That's called Erev Shvius. Erev Shvius means the sixth year. The sixth year is great because, Adarab, if you give me an extra month of Avodas Karka by delaying Shvius, let's say Shvius will start on Rosh Hashanah of the following year. Well, there's also a Din Tosefta Shvius for a month before that, but we're not getting into the laws of Shvius now. What you do is by postponing the beginning of the seventh year, it means Aleph Tishrei is going to be pushed off by a month because of the Ibur in the sixth year, you're giving an extra month of Avodas Karka to prepare for the seventh year. So we want to really maximize the sixth year as far as Avodas Karka is concerned so that we can amass a serious volume of supplies of food that could sustain us during the seventh year. So by adding an extra month of Avodas Karka, because you've postponed Shvius, you now have a greater, you've maximized your produce for the seventh year. And that's a perfect example of an Iber Shana. Now, Rabosai, the Gemara is not saying that as a general rule, you could always predict, and I'm not talking about today's calendar, but that you could always predict that Beis Din would be Ma'abra the Shana in the sixth year, the Erev Shvius year, but you can understand that the Beis Din will be looking with eyes open. Now especially consider another factor here, that we have no Iber Shana in the seventh year, because we don't want to extend the Yisra Avodas Karka for another year, for another month. And not only that, we spoke about the fact that it's not a good idea to add an extra month of Yisra Chodesh during the eighth year. So what we have is the sixth, seventh, and eighth year. If you're not Ma'abra the Shana in the sixth year, then you're going to go 2 years without Iber Shana, which is not tragic. They could be Ma'abra the ninth year. But even so, there's going to be a push towards Iber Shana in the sixth year if all other factors equal out, because in the sixth year, we want to give you an extra year to prepare for Shvius with Avodas Karka. Now, what we're saying here is that Rav Gamliel, who is the Nasi, he had no hesitation about taking the eighth year and being Ma'abra the eighth year. In other words, he wasn't worried about the fact that you would add an extra month of Iser Chadash to the eighth year. Again, keep in mind, we just finished saying, according to Tanakhama, that the eighth year is a year in which we really need to maximize the availability of produce, because we don't have the last year's seventh year to rely on. So to impose another month of Chadash seems to be detrimental. So guess what? The answer is there's something called import. Right? I just had a pair yesterday, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know, I didn't research this, so what I'm saying is very tentative. I'm just trying to give you an example. I'm pretty sure that pair was imported, because I don't think it's the pear season here in Israel. You know, there are various countries on the face of the earth that have, that, you know, that you can get any fruit the whole year round, even without importing. But Israel is not one of those countries. So what happens is, says Rav Gamliel, that in order to make sure that we had enough food to sustain the land of Israel and all the people therein during the eighth year, what they would do is they would import vegetables and grains and fruits from other countries. And those imports were from the earlier year, meaning from a Shishis. Or alternatively, it could be, there are Gamliels of the opinion that there's no Iser Shvius in Chutz Laretz, which I think everybody pretty much agrees, and therefore that produce is not Oser Midin Shvius, so it doesn't have Kedusha Shvius because it's from Chutz Laretz. And not only that, it was produced earlier in the year. Such, again, I'm not going to go into all the details about Chodesh, but let's assume that the Hashrosha of these fruits and vegetables that are being imported took place before the Tetzayin V'Nisan. So they hit the market, let's say, approximately December or January, whenever it is, and by the time it gets there to Israel, it still is Shishis, I'm sorry, it still is Yashan from the previous year. To make a long story short, Rav Gamliel relies on import, and therefore he doesn't have any hesitation in extending the year when there's reason to do so, and thereby postponing the Omer and the Heter of Chadash, because we're not going to starve. We can import vegetables and fruits and grains from Chutz Laretz. So why didn't the Chachamim, why weren't they clever enough to figure out that there's a solution to this problem by importing goods of produce from Chutz Laretz? So that's what the Gemara is going to analyze now. Pluta dahani tanoi. The Sanya, there actually is a shita of the Tanakama in the Braisa that ein mevim yerek michutzlaretz. Again, when it says yerek here, the word yerek is indicative of any produce. Actually, to the exclusion of fruits. We'll get back to fruits in just a second, but the word yerek here includes not only vegetables, but includes grains as well. And at this point, I'm gonna sort of play a pedagogic game with you. I don't have any clue why we can't import vegetables and grains from Chutzlar. So again, you can give, you know, Zionistic reasons, or you can give financial reasons. You can come up with any sort of explanations you want. But Rabbi Seinu Itiru. So thank God that the rabbis disagreed with the Tanakhama and they allowed import. My Benayu. Well, what are they arguing about? Well, what's the issue about import? Amar Rav Yirmiya, Choshishin Lugusheyem Iker Benayu. Iker Benayu means the subject of this machlokus is about a principle called Choshishin Lugusheyem. So it means the following. Let's get rid of the easy case. There's no problem with importing fruits. Nobody raises an eyebrow about import, because fruits, you just simply harvest the fruits, you cut them off the tree. But anything that grows in the ground, then what they did was they would cut it out of the ground, but sometimes part of the ground itself, the dirt itself, which is called afar chutzlaret, would accompany. Have you ever seen when you go in to buy, let's say you want to buy a gift for someone, so you buy a little plant, right? So they give you the plant. Sometimes they give it to you in a vase, and sometimes they can give you a plant without a vase, but it's in dirt, right? So that's called gusheihem. Now, what's the issue? Are we so Zionistic that we don't want any earth coming from Chutz Laretz? I mean, obviously, you know, the earth from Eretz Yisrael is holy, but what's so unholy about the earth from Chutz Laretz? So for this, we have to know a little bit more about something called the Sodeh Beis HaPras, and about Tumas Oel, and about Tumas Mes. But suffice it to say that in Chutz Laretz, you never know where they bury the dead. Any place in Chutz Laretz could potentially, again, you have to ask the question how Kohanim could go to Chutz Laretz. That's not an easy question to answer. But we always assume that land in Chutz Laretz is what's called a Safek Kever. And if there was a dead that was buried under the ground, and now we import that dirt that has Tumas Kever in it, then what's going to happen is, in Eretz Yisrael, we have taros, meaning that we want to make sure that all the fruits and vegetables and so forth remain tar in Eretz Yisrael. And again, we'll have to see exactly what is the nature of this concept called taros of Eretz Yisrael. So we don't want any admixture, according to Tanakhama, of gush offer from Chutz Laretz, because a gush offer from Chutz Laretz has the status of a Safek Kever, and the Rabbanan instituted Gzera that whenever this gush offer of Chutz Laretz, we treat it as a Safek Kever. And that's not something we want to import into Eretz Yisrael, because it can come in contact and contaminate the taros of Eretz Yisrael. That's the sheet of the Tanakhama. Rabbi Seinu said, no, we're not Choshesh. Either we're not choshish because of Sfek Sveka, means who's one suffix, whether they buried the dead in this gush. Number two, even if they buried the dead in the gush, it could be that the dead body decayed before they buried it, or it was chopped up into very small pieces, it didn't have a shear of Tumas Oel, or because we're not afraid that this gush would come in contact with taros. But for whatever reason, there's a whole chain of Svekas here, and the Rabbanan are not afraid of gush. So let's ask the following question. In the eighth year, we don't have the produce of last year, the Shvias, to rely on. So we really desperately need to beef up, you know, the volume of produce that we have during the eighth year. Can we simply solve the problem by importing Yerakos and Tvua from Chutz Laretz? And the answer is that depends upon this machlokus that we're learning now. If you all like the Tanakhama, Ein Mevi'im Yerek Michutz Laretz, there's no import. We will not allow import of Eretz Yisrael because we want to be Shomer Taros in Eretz Yisrael, and the gush offer of Chutz Laretz is a Safek Kever. If I hold on the other hand, like Rabbi Seinu, that you're allowed to import gush offer, meaning Yerakos and Tvua from Chutz Laretz, and we're not choshish for gush offer, if that be the case, and that's what Rabbi Gamliel is pointing out, we could be Ma'aber the eighth year, and we don't have a desperate situation where we won't have enough produce to eat, because we can always rely on the produce of Chutz Laretz. Now, what I mentioned to you before is that Shvius, as far as Ibur Shana, is an issue of Avodas Karka, that we don't want to extend the Isur Avodas Karka for another month. But the Yushalmi, which is quoted here by the Rishonim, has a different take on it. And I'll read it to you. Tam l'dovr she'ein ma'abrim es ha'shana b'shvius, who mishum sheshvias ptura mimaser velo ratzu chachamim liftar chodesh nosaf michiv masros. Now let's talk about maser. Who collects maser? To whom do we give the maser? We're talking about maser rishon to the Levi. So there's an interest in the halacha, a vested interest to make sure that the Levi gets his due portion of maser, because the Levi was too busy in his avodah to spend time in the farms and produce. So he would rely on the maser. Now shviyas is potum in a maser. There's no maser on shviyas. Now if they extend the seventh year, the year of shviyas, by one extra month, then there's another extra month in which there's no maser. And therefore the Yerushalmi says that you're cheating in a sense the Levi from his maser for that 1 month that you added an extended shviyas. But then he goes on and he says that there's an issue called sfiche shviyas. And the reason for hakol rashoim lito misfiche shviyas is yesh lachto shem lo yimtzu tvua Bishvil Karbana Omer Ushte Alechem, which means the following: that according to some, we can still supply the, well, again, it's not clear to me, just give me 1 second, sorry. Makobashoim Lito Misviche Shvias. So we're in the seventh year. Correct? Now, we have to bring the Omer in the seventh year, and now we haven't worked the Karka during the seventh year. So what? Just 1 second. Now there's something missing here. Just 1 second. It means what? If we extend... Oh, now I have it. If we extend Shvius by an extra year, an extra month, just 1 second. So what month are we going to add? We're going to add the month of Adar Sheni. And now we have to bring the Omer. So where are we going to take the Omer from? You know, you can't import from Chutzos, because the Omer has to come from Gidulei Eretz Yisrael. Oh, so what... What produce do we have? So what produce is available during Shvius for the Omer, which is from Bali, and then a month and change later, right, 7 weeks later, we have the Shtei Lechem on Chag HaShvus, which comes from wheat. So where is the Bali and the wheat coming from for the Omer and the Shtei Lechem? So that's called Sviche Shvius. Now, Sviche Shvius means, again, it's very complicated, but for our purposes, it means the following, that there's certain produce that grows naturally without human avoda. And those are called Sviche Shvius. Now, on a Doraisa level, Sviche Shvius is mutter. Oh, so what's going to happen? During the seventh year, there's a limited amount of produce that's growing in the ground that's mutter and doesn't have the dinim of Kedusha Shvius, and that's called Sviche Shvius. The Omer and subsequently the Shtei Lechem has to be brought from the crop of this year, and all the crop of this year has Kedusha Shvius, so the only thing that you're allowed to avail yourself for the Omer would be Sviche Shvius. Now what's going to happen is that when you add an extra Adar, then the people are going to be, you know, madly, you know, craving to get as much as they can from the karka. They'll collect all the Sviche Shvius, and now you've added another month, so that you've given them even another month's opportunity to collect whatever Sviche Shvius is left. And therefore you'll end up in a situation where there's nothing left for the Omer and the Shtei Lechem. So in other words, in order to guarantee that there'll still be ample supply of Sviche Shvius, we're going to limit, or shall we say, What word am I looking for? To be makdim, you know, the Omer. Yeah, I don't mean to be makdim, but I mean not to be ma'acher the Omer, so that if the Omer is brought earlier than rather than later, there's greater accessibility of Svichei Shviyas. But I'm more interested in the Yerushalmi. Again, the Yerushalmi, let's not forget, says that by adding an extra month of Shviyas, you're expanding you're widening this the p'tur of maser, and we don't want to have an extended p'tur of maser. Okay. Yeah.
You said that from the earth of the chutzlars there was a suffix.
A suffix tumas kevin.
Right. Why don't we have that there to show?
What, today?
Yes.
I think that today we first of all, it could be we paskin like the Eish Matirim, the Rabboseinu. I'm not sure, but even if you hold like the Tanakamu says Ein Mevim Yerek Michutzlars, it could be that that only applies when Tuma Vitaro was relevant and there were taros, and we were very careful not to be mitame. For example, I'm going to ask you a question, but I don't mean to ask you this question. So the word "you" here means just a generic term. Do you wash your hands before you eat a fruit? Well, let me start before that. Do you wash your fruit before you eat the fruit? If you don't, your wife is going to get on your case. That I can testify. So you got to wash your fruit because the pesticides and whatever, right? So you wash your fruit. Now I'm going to ask you a second question. Do you wash your hands before you eat the fruit? Or alternatively, do you dry the fruit before you pick it up with your hands? So if your answer is no, then you're in trouble. Why? Because once the fruit is wet, and you are touching it with your hands and your daima considered shnias l'tuma, then you violate the isa of being mitame taros in Eretz Yisrael. But the answer is that these laws don't apply today until Emir Hashem will build the Beis HaMikdash. Now let's take a look at Rashi, Dibur HaMaskil Choshishin, which is five lines up before the end of the page. Choshishin l'gushem shema yavi ima Migush Eretz Ha'amim Shemetame bi Ohel V'yetame Taros Shel Eretz Yisrael. So what Rashi is saying is that the very moment you bring in this Gush Ofer into your house and it has a Safek Kever, then all the fruits that are in that house are contaminated through what's called Ohel. So again, I'm not a Baki in Hilchus Tumah V'Tara. I learned Olos for Tisha B'Av, when the year after I lost my brother passed away on Tisha B'Av. So I tried to finish, Mishnah's Olos in honor of his first yard site, and it was like a horrendous experience. It was horrible. Because in order to learn Olos, you've got to dedicate a good couple of years of your life. You know, you can't just read Olos the way I was trying to read through Olos. It was, besides the fact that the subject of Olos is death, that itself is depressing, but it's very complicated. You know, Reb Chaim Brisker has a sefer on the Rambam, 40%, I calculate, 40% of the sefer of the Rambam is on the Rambam Hilchos Olos of Reb Chaim's Chidusha. So if you take a look at Tosis, Dibur HaMaskil Choshishin, he quotes Rashi, and then he asks Akasha from the second parak of Olos, and it says the following. The Mishnah says that Gush HaBoa Mi'eretz HaAmamin, this is according to the Shita here, the Tanakama, reflected in the Mishnah in Olos, is Metame B'Mada U'V'Masa Avolo B'Ohel. And Tosis is accusing Rashi here of ignoring a Mishnah in Olos. And Tosis tries to defend Rashi by quoting a Gemara in Shabbos, which is also elsewhere in Shas, in Nazir, that Gush Eretz Amim is Metame even be Ohel. But he says the following. What is the difference between the Mishnah and Olos, which says that Gush Ofer is not Mitame B'Ol, it's only Mitame B'Magu Masa. And again, as far as Magu Masa is concerned, we can anticipate that the people will be careful, that there will be no contact direct contact between the Gush Ofra of Chutz La'aretz and the Peros of Eretz Yisrael, that we can supervise. But if it's Oel, that becomes extremely impossible. So the Mishnah in Olos indicates that there's no Tumas Oel by Gush Amamin, whereas in Masech Shabbos and in Nazir, it indicates that Gush Ofra is Metame V'Oel. So how do we reconcile this? So there's a distinction between two types of Ohel. There's one type of Ohel which is considered Mahil. Okay, we'll try to figure what that is. And then there's a possibility of being together with something, like a kever, a dead body, in the same Ohel. Mahil means when you actually bend over a dead body. Well, for example, if you were to stand on a kever, again, this is complicated because a kever is what's called tumah ritzutza. So, you know, if there's no dalet al dalet, it's not metame. But if it's, let's say it's not tumah, if it's a case where there's no dalet al dalet, it's tumah ritzutza, it's olad l'shamayim. So if you're mahil on that kind of a kever, then you are metame. So Tosis points out that what it says in the Gemara in Shabbos, that a gush afar is metame b'ol, that's a case of mahil. For example, if let's say you go to Chutz La'aretz, you know, you take a trip to Austria, right? And what you do is you're standing on the karka of Austria, then you are considered mahil on a safek kever, and that is metame in Gush Ofra, because now you're being Mahil. But let's say in our case, where you're importing a Gush Ofra from Chutz La'aretz, and then you're bringing the Gush Ofra into an Ohel, and there are fruits in the Ohel, that's not Metamin. So therefore, Tosis insists that even after we reconcile the Mishnah in Olos with the Sugyan Shabbos and Nazir, we still come to the conclusion that importing Gush Ofra is not a problem of Ohel, because we're not assuming that he's going to be Mahil on top of the Gush Ofra. That's true for Chutz La'aretz. If he takes a trip to Chutz La'aretz, he's Mahil on a Gush Ofra. And that's the Gemara in Shabbos. That's a problem. And Rashi, according to Tosa's accusation, made it confuse this with a Gush Ofra that's being imported from Chutz La'aretz. There's not an issue of being Mahil, there's only an issue of being in the same Ohel. So again, we'd have to learn more of Olos, but suffice it to say that if you have a Sofek Kever in an Ohel, and you have other things in the Ohel, the other objects in the Ohel do not contract Tumah. The problem of Gush Ofar is being Mahil on the Gush Ofar. So if let's say you would take a Gush Ofar and you put it under his pillow in Yerushalayim, you'd have a problem, because that's called Mahil. But as far as being together in the same Ohel, that's not a problem.
That's only Gush Ofra from Amamim is only Safek Kever, right? Safek Kever Berushas Arabis.
Ah, so you want to say it should be Safek to Berushas Arabim. Well, you have to know exactly what's the definition of Berushas Arabim. Berushas Arabim is a place Sharabim Shchichim Bo, the place where you out in your and not an orchard, what's it called, a field, I don't know what you'd call it. What do you say? You have a better word than a field, you know, where he grows his produce.
Hasn't been
carmelous. I'm talking about Sofik Tumish Sarab. There's no such thing as a carmelous in Sofik Tumish Sarab. Let's not confuse, that's a Shabbos halacha. But as far as Tumish Sarab is concerned, for Sofik Tumah, you need a public area. In other words, it's not dependent upon, you know, how many mechitzas there might be, or other, you know, other definitions that apply to Shabbos. And therefore, if you take Gush Ofar from a field, that would be considered Sofik Tumah Shus HaYochid. But again, even Sofik Tumah Shus HaYochid, you have to know Sofik Tumah Shus HaYochid is only when it's a suffix all, suffix low all, meaning that you don't know whether you went into the Rishus HaYochid or not. Well, you don't know how far you went in, but you know that there's a mess there. In this case, where you cut off a piece of Gush Ofar, we don't even know that in that field there was a mess to begin with. So even if it was Sayachid, it's not so simple that we would apply the principle of Safik Tumah Sayachid Sveikotame. Because Safik Tumah Sayachid only applies when you know that there was Tumah to begin with. Alright, I'm not learning Tumah Vatara now, so you'll have to let me off the hook here. I have enough trouble with Ibur Shana. Good. Now we have another problem over here. I told you that the word Yerek here in this brisa is Lav Dafka, and it's coming Lafuke Peros HaElon, because in Peros HaElon there's no Gush Afar. But what about the case of Tvua? The Gemara seems to be assuming that when you cut off grains, you're talking about the five species of grains of Tvua, we're going to import not only the grains themselves, but we're going to be left with the Gush Afar. Is that really true? So he quotes here the Yad Ramah in the footnote here in Masifta, and the Yad Ramah says, Tema, Bishlema, Yerek, Habamin Chutzlaretz, Yesh Chashash, Sheyove Imo Gush Afar, Kishikenu Aderech, Litlosh Esa Yerek, Min Hadoma, Im Afar Shesvivo, Avol Bitvua, Ein Makom, Lach Lechashash Zeh. Shari kotzim oso b'magol. Magol's a sickle. V'af zoren es apsoles begoren. Not only that, if let's say, for example, you harvest a certain volume of tvua, we always assume that there's some how do you call it, psolus mixed in, like pebbles and chaff and so on. But we do what's called zria, not with an ayin, zria with a yud, which means we winnow it. You don't export tvua in its natural state right after the harvest. You first refine it, so to speak. You remove its impurities. Is ketzad yavi afar ima? So the Yad Ramah says the following to answer this question. He says lo yitochen shlo yavo imo ma'at afar. In other words, if I would isolate one bushel's worth of wheat, I don't have to assume that there's a gush offer there. But when they're exporting vast volumes of wheat, it's impossible to assume that they refined it to such an extent that every single bushel of wheat is totally free of any offer. And now what we can do is we can be mitzaref all the different small amounts of gush afar into a shir hametame. And further, what he says, yesh makomo shenogim lakar esatvua minakarka im sharsheha. He tells you to take a look in a sugyan bav mitzia. The Gemara says that in certain places in the world, what they did was they actually pulled out the tvua from the ground, together with a little bit of a gush afar. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, let's go on. Ein ma'avrim es hashana mipnei hatuma. Okay, this is a gigantic sugya. I'm going to try to do the best I can. Sunday is Tisha B'Av, so we won't be meeting. Although they say they caught the Rogachev learning during Avelus, but we're not on the Madrega of the Rogachev. So, Monday, I'm here. I don't know how many people, again, might be here. I'm not asking for a commitment. Okay, we may have two or three people. So I'm going to plan to give the shiur on Monday. Tuesday, I can give the shiur, but we'd have to start a little earlier. Maybe at 7:45 or at 8 o'clock. So we'll see if we can negotiate that, because I have a commitment on Tuesday. Wednesday and Thursday I'm out of here, and we can talk about the following week, maybe Sunday, Monday and Tuesday, and then I'm out of here. So we'll see, we'll negotiate, and we'll see if we're going to continue. When we get together at the end of August, which is almost Rosh Chodesh Elul, we have not completed the first parak, which ends on Daf Yud Ches. I'm emotionally, I'm emotionally motivated to want to continue in Sanhedrin, but I'm always afraid that there are people who wouldn't join the Shia because they don't want to jump in the middle. Maybe the pshara is that we'll fast forward to another parak in Sanhedrin. I don't know. All that is anyway. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Ma'avrim Es Hashana Mipnei HaTumah. This is a gigantic sugya. there's a situation in which the tzibur of Klal Yisrael are tmeim, and the only opportunity for them, given the amount of days that it takes to be matire yourself, so for the tzibur to be matire themselves, they need more time than they have before the 14th of Nisan. Now what happens on the 14th of Nisan? The Korban Pesach. So we want to guarantee that the tzibur be tar by the 14th. So the best answer, the best advice or recommendation would be to add another month, so that we postpone the Korban Pesach by another month, and that would give the tzibur ample time to be matar themselves. Now what's the situation, what's the scenario in which we know that the tzibur are tmeim and they will not have, unless we do an Ibur Shana, enough time to be matar themselves? So Rashi gives two possibilities. The first possibility is called Tumas Avodah Zarah. Now during the kingship of Ahaz, and he's the father of Chizkiyah is going to be our main actor on the stage in this whole discussion, because of a pasuk in Divrei HaYamim. Chizkiyah's father Ahaz was a period of time where idolatry was widespread. Now again, we have to know why, so don't ask me questions now, just assume that this is correct, that Avodah Zarah is metame. Any idol worship engenders tumah in the same way that tumas mess engenders tumah. So even if the idol worshiper will swear on a stack of Bibles, I don't know how much his oath is worth, that he did not come in contact with any dead bodies, the Avodah Zarah itself is metame. And that's a sugya at the end of Masecht Avodah Zarah. So if that be the case, if at the time of Ahaz, when Ahaz passes on and now Chizkiyah HaMelech takes over the reign of his father, Chizkiyah was a great tzaddik and he wanted to do away with all of the Avodah Zarah, he had a problem when it came to the Korban Pesach, because there was not enough time for the tzibur to be mitired themselves from tumas avodas kochavim before the Korban Pesach, and therefore the best recommendation you could have given, and that's what Chizkiyah thought was the best idea, would be to postpone the Korban Pesach by 1 month and be ma'abra the shana. The Tanakhama of our Brice is opposed to that, and he holds that let them bring the Korban Pesach bitumah. And that's based on Halach and Hilchas Korban Pesach, that if Rov Tzibur Atmeim, you'll bring the Korban Pesach B'tumah. Later on, we're going to see that there's another possibility of waiting for Pesach Sheni. And both of these possibilities arise even without Ibur Shana. Hence, the Tanakhama says there's no need to be Ma'abed Shana. We can solve our problem. We can have a cake and eat it. We can have Korban Pesach in its time. And we could bring the Korban Pesach because Rov of the Tzibur Atmeim. Now, there's another possible scenario in which Rov HaTzibur Atmeim. And that is when the Nasi, and that's again one example, there may be other examples, but we'll take the most profound example of a Nasi. The law is that if a Nasi dies, everybody has to go out to his funeral. There are many other cases where even if a great scholar dies, but you don't need everyone to go out to the Kvura, maybe you need a large contingency. But in the case of a Nasi, and I'm giving a radical case, the entire Tzibur goes out to participate in the funeral. So if you take a look at Rashi, four lines up from the bottom of the page, Mipnei Atuma, this is Rashi's first pshat, Kigon Shayonasi Cholav Amdu Lomos B'Erev Pesach. Now this is, I mean, it's amazing to me, you know, we're talking thousands of years ago, this is something that sounds so contemporary, where the medical team, and even today they're off, they're way off the mark. But anyway, the medical professionals, the experts, will tell you exactly when this man is going to expire. In this case, the Nasi. He's going to expire on Erev Pesach, which means everyone is going to be Tameh when they participate in his funeral. O Yomim Kodem, or not, you know, it doesn't mean that he has to die in Erev Pesach, but he's going to definitely die a few days before Pesach, and we don't have enough time, you know, to wait the 7 days of Tumas Mes, and you have to have Azon Shlishi V'Shvi and all that. This was not going to happen. Or, for example, he gives another example where they can't find the Paraduma. So right now they don't have access. You've got to give them an extra month, and then they'll be able to clinch the Tara of the Tzibur. So according to Tanakama, what are we going to do? Are we going to postpone the Pesach by adding an extra month? No. What are we going to do instead? We're going to bring the Korban Pesach because of Rov Tzibur Tmeim, and we could bring it Bituma. Again, I'm not using the word Hutcha because that's going to be Bisugi. And the Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth about whether Tumah Hutcha B'Tzibur or Dechuya B'Tzibur. So I don't want to get into that yet. It's coming around the bend. Emir Tzashem will get there in 5 minutes. But first, we have a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ma'abrim. Later on we'll see that this is a mistaken text. And actually Rabbi Yehuda says Ein Ma'abrim. But right now we have the text of Ma'abrim. It means that Rabbi Yehuda says we're not going to bring the Karban Pesach Bituma, and we're not going to fall back on the principle of Rov Tzibur Tmeim, but rather we're going to do something that's a lot smoother, and it's a Lechatchila, and that is we're going to add an extra month so that everyone will be tar at the time of the Karban Pesach. Now, presumably, the next statement in this brisa, Om Rav Yehuda, is going to be a support text for Rav Yehuda. But that's impossible, because the next piece of this brisa is going to, Adarav Pukfager, is going to prove that the sheet of the Tanakhama that Ein Ra'avim is Hashonah, so therefore we're going to have to change the text. And instead of Rav Yehuda Omer Ma'abrim, it's going to be Rav Yehuda Omer Ein Ma'abrim. So I'm just giving you a heads up here. But right now we have the text that says Rav Yehuda Omer Ma'abrim. Omer Rav Yehuda Maisa B'chizkiyo Melech Yehuda. So again, he takes over for his father Achav. And right now the entire Tzibur, because of rampant idolatry, is in the state of Tumah. She'iver es Hashanah b'nei Tumah. He wanted to give the people time to get rid of the idols and the idol worship and cease and desist, and then to go through a process of Tara. He needed more time. It was too close to the Korban Pesach, so he added a month. But afterwards, he had regret. Ubikesh rachamim al atzmo. He asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be mochel him for his avera, because he did the wrong thing. Now, does this support Rabbi Yehuda, or does this contradict Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda says Ma'abrin, and Maisa b'chizkiyo ha-melech u'bikesh rachim al-atzmo. Is that a support text to Rabbi Yehuda? Then Ma'abrin? No. Well, if it's Ma'abrin, then Rabbi Yehuda would certainly think that chizkiyo ha-melech would have no reason to ask rachamim for an avera of being Ma'abrin the Shana. Now, keep in mind that why is this such a terrible avera if you hold Ein Ma'abrin? Because, Rabbosai, what's going to happen is that the Ibur Shana is invalid. The people are going to celebrate Korban Pesach a month later. They're going to all forfeit the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, because it's not the 14th of Nisan, it's the 14th of Iyar. So we'll talk about Pesach Sheni in a minute. But are you following what's at stake here? Not only that, we have the Isra Achilus Chametz at stake as well. Because they would eat chametz on Pesach, because they thought it was Ador Sheni, when really the whole enterprise of Ibur Shana was invalid, because Ein Ma'abrim Hashanah B'nei HaTumah. And this is a real serious avera, and Chizkiyo was a great tzaddik. We have to understand what he was thinking. He now got involved inadvertently in causing this terrible thing. Now, how do we see this in the Psukim? How does Rabbi Yehuda know that Chizkiyo HaMelech was Ma'abr the Shana Mipnei HaTumah? The Chsiv, it says in Divrei HaYomim, Ki marbis ha'am, because most of the people, Rabas me Ephraim, marbis ha'am, Rabas me Ephraim v'nashi sochu zvulin. Now I'm not sure exactly why the pasuk isolates four of the shvatim, but it says that most of these people lo hi taharu. And then, if you take a look on Daf Yud Beis Amid Beis, the next part of the pasuk says ki ochlu es haPesach below kakosiv. Below kakosiv means against the Torah. Ki ispalel chizkio aleim lemar Hashem atov yichaper biad. And the way that we're interpreting this pasuk now, based on Rabbi Yehuda, is that Chizkio prayed to Hashem, good God, that He should atone for his sin of being ma'abra the shana, because rov ha'am with tmeim, and we see clearly that Chizkio understood that his ibur shana was invalid. So they ate the Pesach shalom bizmano, and they ate chametz on Pesach, and there were all sorts of takolos as a result of an invalid ibur shana, and therefore he had to be mevakish rachamim. Now, I just want to point out to you that the commentators here quote other psukim in Divrei HaYomim to clarify this. We're looking now in what's called Divrei HaYomim Beis, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Yud Ches. But if you look earlier in the same chapter, I'm going to read to you the psukim. It says, Vayo'etz HaMelech, which means the king, Chizkio in this case, had an Eitzah to solve the problem of Tumah. And Visarov, he got together his offices, and he initiated this process of Ibershon. Of a kol hakol b'Yushalayim, everyone in Yushalayim agreed to Chizkio, they all kowtowed to his decision. And then it says, Lasos ha-Pesach v'chodesh ha-Sheni. What that means is they added an extra month, which would be Adar Sheni, and then they did the Pesach. Again, the language of the Tanakh is very, very confusing here, because it says, Lasos HaPesach Chodesh HaSheni. What does that sound like, if you didn't know our sugya? It sounds like Pesach Sheni. And then I understand why everybody agreed to Chizkio that we should delay the Korban Pesach to Pesach Sheni. Again, you might ask, well, why couldn't they bring the Pesach and Pesach Rishon if Rov of the Tzi? But that's a good question. And that depends upon whether it's Hutra or Dechuya. So if it's Dechuya, we would like to look for another option. And it would seem that according to the Psukim, the option that Chizkio availed himself of was not to be Ma'abra the Shona, but rather to encourage that the Tzibu would bring Pesach Sheni. And if that be the case, we're not exactly sure where and why Chizkio needed a kapara. So I'm just pointing out to you, Rabosai, that you know we have a lot of work here if we want to navigate through the psukim and figure out two things. Number one, did Chizkio actually be ma'abra the shana? Which means that we're going to have to assume that when it says lasos ha-pesach b'chodesh ha-sheni, what he meant was the month of Nisan was the Chodesh Sheni, because he added another Adar. Not that the Chodesh Hasheni was Iyar, and we're talking about Pesach Sheni. And then we have to figure out if it would have been Pesach Sheni according to these psukim, then what do we do with our pasuk, which says Vayispal Chizkia Hashem Atov Yechaper? Why is it Chaper? I mean, it would seem that decision in no way undermines the observance of Korban Pesach or Chametz or whatever it might be. Where's the Avera here by encouraging the people, instead of bringing the Korban Pesach on Yudalad B'Nisan, to bring it on Yudalad B'Iyar? Very difficult here, the psukim. Okay. We're still not finished with the Braisa. Rabbi Shimon Omer, now assuming that Rabbi Shimon is a third Shita, he says the following, Im mipnei atuma ibruha, if you're going to tell me that the reason why Chizkio HaMelech added an extra month is because of tuma, so muberes. Now I'm not sure how to interpret the word muberes, whether it means that he did the right thing lechatchila, or at least b'dieved the ibur shana is valid. I don't know. I'm also not sure exactly where Rav Shimon fits in the constellation of Shitas here in the Braisa. So we go back to the first Shita. The Braisa says, Ein Ma'arvus Hashana Mipnei Atuma. Presumably that would mean that if they were Ma'abr the Shana, then it would be invalid. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ma'abrim, he has no problem. And Rabbi Shimon is somewhere in the middle. He says, Me'uberes, Ibrua Me'uberes. Maybe he holds that L'chatchil, they shouldn't have done an Ibur, and they could have brought the Pesach Betuma, but B'dievet the Ibur is Chal. But now if Rabbi Shimon recognizes the validity of the Ibur, then Mipnei Ma Bikesh Rachma Al'atzmo. So what was Chizkiah's problem? Why did he do an Avera for which he needed a Kapara? And the answer is, She'ein Ma'abrim Ela Adar. There's a whole new wild understanding of the parasha in Chizkiah, in Divrei HaYomim. For who Iber Nisan B'Nisan. Now what does that mean, Rabosai? Chizkiah is not stupid. You know, we're not talking about an idiot. He knew that you can't add another month of Nisan. So what does it mean when it says Iber Nisan bin Nisan? Well, so I'm going to give you the bottom line here. I mean, again, this is a whole long discussion, but the bottom line is what happened was it was the 30th day of the month of Adar. Now, the month of Adar could either be a Choser, in which case the 30th day is the beginning of Nisan, or it could be a Mole. Now there was enough reason to establish the 30th day as Rosh Chodesh Nisan. However, although maybe the Eidim came and testified, but they hadn't yet gone through the official process of being Mekadesh Chodesh Nisan. So Chizkiah thought that until they, you know, they declare Mekudesh Mekudesh, there's a possibility that the 30th day is not Nisan, but it's Adar. Do you follow? Because then Adar becomes a Mole. And in which case, there's still room for Ibur Shana to add another month of Adar, because Nisan hasn't begun yet. His mistake was, and again, it's a Lubdish mistake that he made, but you could really justify it, was that already there was ample proof and evidence to establish the 30th day as Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which means that the Ibur Shana would not be valid. So Rav Shimon says, why do you need Kapar? What's the terrible of him? Because the Ibur Shana is invalid because it was already Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Again, from Chizkiah's perspective, it wasn't yet Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It was still Adar, and Adar was a Chodesh Mole, and therefore he still had the right to be Ma'abar the Shana. But his mistake was that day was already established, and we'll see exactly how, as Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It was too late for the Ibur, thus his Ibur was invalid. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, that Chizkiah's mistake was an entirely different mistake. Chizkiah, in fact, was not Ma'abra the Shana, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Why did he ask for Bakoshes Rachamim? Mipnei Shehisi Es Yisrael Lasos Pesach Sheni. Now we go back to the psukim that we read before in Divrei HaYomim, which don't appear on the page of our Gemara. And the pasuk says, Lasos HaPesach B'Chodesh HaSheni. What's Chodesh HaSheni now? Rabbo said, what's Chodesh HaSheni now? Is Iyar. Yeah. Right, is Iyar. Chodesh HaSheni now is Iyar. He wasn't Ma'abar the Shana. And Rabbi Yehuda, if you recall, at the beginning of this brisa, was quoting the episode of Chizkiah and his need for Bakoshes Rachamim because he was Ma'abar the Shana. And he shouldn't have been Ma'abar the Shana. There was no justification. Now we're saying a whole different story. That his guilt, Chizkiah's guilt, had nothing to do with him. He wasn't Ma'abar the Shana, but he pushed them off for a month. And we don't push off the Karban Pesach to Pesach Sheni unless someone cannot bring the Pesach and Pesach Rishon. So for example, if I'm Tomei at the time of Yudal B'Nisan, then I'll bring my Pesach on Pesach Sheni in Iyar. But if the entire Tzibur is Tomei at the time of Yudal B'Nisan, then we'll bring the Karban in its time. And instead, what Chizkiah did was he pushed the entire Tzibur off for a month until Iyar for Pesach Sheni, and that is an Avon. Now again, we have to understand what is the severity of that sin. such that he desperately needs tshuva. But at least according to this opinion, we understand the pasuk when it says lasos ha-pesach b'chodesh ha-sheni, and we read that kipshuto, that he made a pesach sheni korban pesach. Again, if you hold like those shitos that he was ma'aber the shana, then when it says b'chodesh ha-sheni means he added an extra month of Adar, but that's not simple pshat. It says lasa pesach b'chodesh ha-sheni. It doesn't say anything about Hebrew shana.
So which would be worse, the
again, if you assume that ein ma'avrim is hashana, then the worst avera would be ibur shana, because that entails a whole violation and a complete akira of Karpon Pesach and then the holiday of Pesach. I mean, everything is messed up. You know, he really severely needs a kapara. If on the other hand you tell me that he pushed them off to Pesach Sheni the way Reb Shimon ben Yehuda had it, it's not tragic. I mean, again, you know, they should have brought it in Pesach Rishon, so you brought it in Pesach Sheni. Did that therefore undermine the entire enterprise of Korban Pesach? I don't know. You know, I would assume not. But we have to see. If you hold like Reb Shimon, that Chizkiyo's mistake was that it was already Nisan, and he was Ma'abra the Shana in Nisan, then once again you come to the conclusion that the Eber is completely invalid and the whole system is messed up as far as Korban Pesach and the observance of Pesach. So now the Gemara asks the obvious question. Rabbi Yehuda is quoted in Abraisa saying Ma'abrin, that Tumah, in the case of Rovat Tzibur, is enough of a justification for Eber Shana. And then he quotes the Maisa of Chizkiah, who did Tshuva because he was Ma'abrin the Shana. Omar Mar, the Brisa says Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ma'abrim. Alma, you see that Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's better if you have two choices. One is to bring the carbon tumah, the carbon bituma, or to postpone it by adding an extra month. Then Rabbi Yehuda says that. One second, Ma'abrim, correct? That's the gears that we have. I'm getting confused because the Gemara is about to change this, but Ma'abrim. No, why Ma'abrim? Why not just implement the halacha of Rov Tzibur? Alma, the Islay Rav Yehuda, Tuma Dechuya Hi Betzibur. It means that this possibility of bringing the Korban Pesach Bituma when Rov Hatzibur Tami, that's just a fallback possibility. B'makom she'ein eitzav ein tvuna, if there's no other possibility, if there's another possibility, we don't want to do it that way. We don't want to bring a Korban Bituma. And now Rabbi Yehuda says there's another possibility. I could solve the problem. I could have my cake and eat it. They don't have to bring the Korban Bituma, and they can bring it in its time. How do we do so? Through Ibur Shana. And that's Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda clearly holds that for the tzibur to bring it bituma, that's really a desperate fallback position. That's something that we should avoid at all costs if there's a possibility. That's called dechuya. So the Gemara asks, again, I don't know who's the makshan here. Some anonymous makshan, because the Gemara is going to get very upset with this makshan. And the makshan is going to prove from a brisa that Rabbi Yehuda in fact holds that tuma hutra b'tzibur. Now, how do we prove from the brisa that Rabbi Yehuda's tuma hutra b'tzibur? So this has to do with the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim. The Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim is going to effectuate a kapara. No. Forget about that. That's true what I said, but it's not relevant to us. The Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim is going to create a situation where a carbon could become a carbon kosher even if it's brought bituma. How does the Kohen Gadol have the magical ability to do so? So the Gemara thinks that he does it with what's called a tzitz. He wears on his forehead the tzitz. I don't know what the English translation of tzitz is. I would translate it as T-Z-I-T-Z. It's a tzitz. That's what it is. Now tzitz has the power when it's worn on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol to be mechaper, meaning to validate a carbon that's brought bitumah. However, when the Kohen Gadol went into the Migdash on Yom HaKippurim, I have news for you, Rabosa, he did not wear the tzitz. That may sound strange, because presumably the Kohen Gadol wore the tzitz 24/7, but not on Yom HaKippurim. I'll tell you why. Because on Yom HaKippurim, it's the only day in the calendar of the year that the Kohen Gadol wore Big Day Lavan, which is a whole different set of Big Day Kahuna, and it does not include the tzitz. And Rabbi Yehuda says, that's not a problem. The fact that the Kohen Gadol, when he does the avoda, again you have to know there are many different avodas, but the avodas pnim he does with Big Day Lavan, and he's not wearing the tzitz, that's not a problem, says Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because Tumah Hucha B'tzibur, the karbonas that are brought on Yom HaKippurim, are karbonas of the tzibur. And with regard to karbonas of the tzibur, we have a principle called Hucha B'tzibur. So we don't need any sort of process to validate, to be machshir, a karbon bituma if that karbon is a karbon tzibur. And the Gemara now, the Makshan is going to say, well, that's a steer to Rabbi Yehuda in the case of Korban Pesach. In the case of Korban Pesach, Rabbi Yehuda was applying the principle of Tuva Dechuya Bitzibur. Now again, this is very complicated, because if I had to classify Korban Pesach under one of two categories, it's either a Korban Tzibur or a Korban Yochid, what is the only answer to that question? There are no two answers to that question. It's a Korban Yochid. Korban Pesach is a Korban Yochid. But it's complicated. Why is it complicated? It's because as far as Tumah is concerned, there's halacha that since all the yechidim that make up Klal Yisrael are all obligated in the midst of a Korban Pesach as a Korban Yachid, but nevertheless it's the amalgamation of all of Klal Yisrael, therefore there's halacha that we bring the Korban Pesach bitumah, meaning if Rov Tzibur or Tmeim, then the Torah was Matir and Machshir bringing Korban Pesach. Normally, when we say Tumah Hutra, we're talking about a Korban Tzibur. Here we're talking about a Korban Yachid, but the unique dimension of a Korban Pesach is that despite the fact that it's a Korban Yachid, we still have a kind of quasi-halacha of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. Why? Because here's a Korban Yachid, it's not you or me. So for example, if I have to bring a Korban Chatos, that's a Korban Yachid. And if there's any Tumah involved, that's going to be considered Dechuya. And in order to be machshir such a carbon, the Kohen Gadol would have to wear that sits on his metzach. But in the case of a carbon tzibur, like for example the karbonas that are brought on Yom HaKippurim to achieve kaparas tzibur, there, even though the Kohen Gadol is not wearing the tzitz, nevertheless the carbon could be brought up in tumah because tumah hucha b'tzibur. In the case of carbon pesach, insofar as it's a carbon yachid, we would not apply the principle of tumah hucha b'tzibur. But the carbon yachid of pesach is not like the carbon yachid of a chatos and olah and asham, because every single last Jew is obligated in the mitzvah of what? Of carbon pesach. And here the Torah made a leniency that if most of the tzibur are tameh, then we can bring the karbon, and that's similar to karbon tzibur in that sense. But again, you know, if you define it, and there are many nafkaminis, karbon pesach is a karbon yachid. Again, there are many. You can have 50 people bringing one karbon, but they're shutfim, they're partners. They're not a tzibur. A tzibur means when the karbon is obligatory on the tzibur as a tzibur. But anyway, leave that out for a minute. So let's take a look. Again, we have to stop now, but I just want to read the kash, at least, of the makshan here. The Gemara is going to pounce upon the makshan. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, Ma'abrim, he prefers Ibur Shana, rather than flex the din of Karban Pesach, Berov Tzibur, and bring it in its time, B'tumah. Because Tumah Dechuya, he B'Tzibur. Vatanya, we have a brice that says Hatzitz, which is Machaper on all Karbonos, even if those Karbonos are Tmeim. And again, there's a basic Machlokas Rishonim. What does it mean that the Tzitz is Maratz on Tumah? Does it mean that the owner of the carbon is Tomei, or does it mean the carbon itself is Tomei? Again, that's for those who are learning Yuma, you know, you have to know that. But anyway, the brice quotes the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is about to disagree. Rabbi Shimon holds that tzitz is merata, and it's mechaper on a korban shenitma bein sheyeshna al mitzcho bein sheeno al mitzcho. It's merata. That's Rabbi Shimon's halacha. So even if the kohen gadol is not wearing the tzitz, let's say for example on Yom Kippur when he wears the big day lavan, nevertheless it's mechaper and it's merata on tuma. The very existence of the tzitz, you know, it doesn't have to be worn on the metzach of the kohen gadol. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no. Odo al mitzcho meratza. Eino odo al mitzcho meratza. If the kohen gadol were to take off the tzitz from his forehead, then it doesn't have the power of ritzui, and the carbon that's brought betum is possible. Amalo Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon turns to Rabbi Yehuda and he says, kohen gadol b'yom ha-kippurim yochiach. When the kohen gadol goes lifnai v'lifnim, he's wearing big day lavan. He's not wearing the tzitz. Is eino al mitzcho. And yet we know that the whole purpose of the kohen gadol is to bring ritzui through a karbon, even if that karbon is tameh, or even the bala karbon is tameh. It's meratza. Amalor Rabbi Yehuda hanach liyom kippurim. You have no proof from Yom Kippurim. My fight with you, my argument with you is about what we call a carbon yachid, let's say a chatos, an olah, an asham, etc. But in the case of Yom Kippurim, all the karbonis that were brought on Yom Kippurim were all karbonis tzibur and tumah hutra b'tzibur. So again, in the case of carbon yachid, then we're talking about, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the tzitz is meratza, but that's conditional on the fact that the kohen gadol is wearing the tzitz. If it's not olav, then it's not going to be meratza on a carbon that's betuma. When you talk about a carbon sivur, then forget about the tzitz. I don't need the tzitz. I have a principle called hutra b'tzibur, and if a hutra b'tzibur, I don't need the tzitz. You know, you're telling me, well, he doesn't have the tzitz on his metzach, I couldn't care less because it's tumah hutra b'tzibur. So we ran out of time. We'll finish this sugi b'li neder on Monday. I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a meaningful, first of all, a good Shabbos. That's first of all. Again, what the Shabbos is, I don't know. I can't tell you whether it's Tisha B'Av or it's not Tisha B'Av. That's very, very confusing to me. And it's basically, I think, a machlok between the Machab and Ramah, and has many, many different nafkaminas. The Ramah sees Tisha B'Av as Tisha B'Av, even if it's on Shabbos. Many different nafkaminas. But I'm not sure if we follow the Ramah. In this case, I want to be a Sephardi. Follow the Machaber, and there's no Tisha B'Av. So we'll commemorate Tisha B'Av on Yom Rishon, and Emir Hashem, we'll get together on Yom Shevi. Everyone should have a meaningful fast. We should be so fit to see the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe even before we get to Tisha B'Av. You know, we got to tell the Mashiach to take a speedy donkey here, because we gotta get you here before Tisha B'Av.